preserving foods, canned and otherwise, preserving culture, preserving faith. Are they all related? This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between those, between spirituality, between ourselves and our lives, and a lot more. This is episode 388 of The Next Thing.
Hi, this is Susie of In His Shoes Ministries welcoming you to a new episode of The Next Step. Since 2008, The Next Step has been coming to you on a weekly basis, bringing you the voice of Armenian Orthodox spirituality, Armadoxy for the New World. We invite you to listen in as Father Voskin connects the dots between the ancient and the contemporary, between the physical, emotional, and spiritual worlds. Whether you're searching for practical and deeper applications of faith in your life, or if you're one of the many disenfranchised members of the church community, you've tuned in to the right station. Father Voskin has a message for you. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
What's your favorite eat stop? When you're hungry, where do you go? Is it fast food? Is it someplace nice? Is it like a middle of the road kind of place? Is it your home? Is it your kitchen? When you are hungry, what's your stop? Where do you go? Pope Francis weighs in this week. Yeah, he came in this week with, well, his favorite stop. Well, I'd like to think it's his favorite stop. He said, Eucharist nourishes those hungry for love, mercy. Yep. Your tummy's hungry, you go to a restaurant. How about when your soul, you need a little love, a little mercy, huh? The Eucharist is not just a reward for the good, but also strength for the weak, nourishment for those who hunger for love, forgiveness, and mercy, Pope Francis said. This hunger can be satisfied only by the bread that comes from above. Jesus himself is the living bread that gives life to the world. The Pope said in a message to participants of the National Eucharistic Congress in Mumbai, India, November 12th through 15th. Now, this is a congress I want to go to. How come I only get to go to these meetings that happen inside the church office with a few people talking about what the picnic date is and, important things for local level administration? But check this out. The National Eucharistic Congress in Mumbai, India. Now there's a congress, okay? That's the congress we got to go to. The Pope said to the congress theme, nourishment by the Eucharist to nourish others, was very relevant and served as a reminder that people suffer from spiritual hunger that can be satisfied only by the bread that comes from above. The sacrament of the Eucharist, he stressed, also leads us to solidarity with those in need. Those who partake of Christ's body and blood cannot remain idle. Cannot remain idle when seeing others suffering want and hunger. I wasn't going to read all of it, but let me go on. This is, the first time through, I didn't get all of this. This is great. Those nourished by the Eucharist are called to bring the joy of the gospel to those who have not received it, the Pope said. Those nourished by the Eucharist, okay, you've been fed, are called to bring the joy of the gospel to those who have not received it. Strengthened by the living bread, we are called to bring hope to those who live in darkness and in despair. Pope Francis expressed his joy that the National Eucharistic Congress may serve as a beacon of light to the people of India and an occasion for them to come together in unity and in love. And with that wish, we kick off a new next step, telling you that, yeah, that beacon of light that he hoped for India certainly is a beacon of light that is welcome throughout the world. Hope you're doing good wherever you happen to be, wherever you're listening to this podcast. I always like to start off with something that just kind of grabs our attention, but I have to tell you, the more there isn't a day that goes by where I'm not more fascinated or more surprised at the level of spirituality this man is presenting, because it's not in the usual spiritual one, but it's a hands-on, and the extension of that love, the love of Christ to his brothers, to his sisters, to people, to all of us. What a beautiful, beautiful expression. Anyway, got a lot to talk to you about today. Let's start off. I'm gonna talk to you about some really cool stuff today, okay? We're going to talk about preserves. Yeah, we're going to talk about preserves, about pickling. And yeah, it's going to be more definitely. Oh, you know me by now. You definitely know me by now. It's not going to be just about those candied preserves, about the jams and the pastrama. It's going to be, where there'll be a definite spiritual link. But you'll have to wait and check that out. I want to start off with, a follow-up I shared with you last week about the Madhav.
We ain't got no badges.
Paying it forward, about giving of yourself.
We don't need no badges.
Giving to others. We talked about that concept of Madhav.
I don't have to show you any stinking badges.
Armenian Orthodoxy. Well, right after we published last week, I believe it was the following day, it was published in the LA Times, the article about, our correction of what Madhav should be. Yeah, it wasn't the greatest article, I've got to admit. It wasn't written the way I would write it. I mean, it wasn't explicit, didn't say everything, but it said enough, at least cleared the air. And we even got a little bit of air time. We were on a very local and a popular show here in the Los Angeles area, and just a pretty large audience, thanks to the LA Times and thanks to KFI, the radio station here in Los Angeles, that's a talk radio, and a couple of hosts talked about it. Anyway, I will definitely put a link to the new article. We had one from last week, but here's how it all panned out, okay? So we did get the news out about what Madhav is, about paying it forward, about doing to others, about sharing. But I also got a very interesting comment from one of our listeners named Sarkis. And it's interesting because he broke up the word Madhav. He says, isn't Madhav Dar Ahkad? The word Ahkad means to the poor. It's to give to the poor. And I thought, wow, that's cool. I don't know if that's where the word comes from, but it certainly is. It should make us think about them, to the poor. And that's what Madhav is all about, to pay it forward, to say thanks to God, the offer of thanksgiving by sharing with others. And this is the season of Thanksgiving. As we get ready for Christmas, we have the season of Advent. And I shared with you last week about all the different things that we have to prepare ourselves for. Madhav is not necessarily just taking an animal and slaughtering it. It definitely is not about slaughtering the animal and having a feast. But in the old times, they would slaughter the animal and distribute it. Now, what does this mean? This becomes a delivery system. You see, the church delivers. Okay, you've got poor people in the world. Jesus says, take care of the poor. You need a delivery system. So the system of Madhav is built into there, just as marriage was built in so that the children have belonging, so the children aren't out there, but the church takes ownership of that marriage by saying it is a sacred union, to understand that the offspring of that marriage, that the children of that marriage are sacred, and we have a responsibility, not just the mother, not just the father, but together as a family unit to that children. So it's a delivery system. Marriage, the institution, becomes a delivery system of giving security, of giving protection to those who cannot protect themselves. Same way with Madhav, it becomes a delivery system of providing the food, providing means to people that otherwise cannot take care of themselves, the poor, the suffering, the maimed, the lame. A delivery system, that's all it is. I mean, you need a way of reaching out to these people. So how beautiful is Madoch? You tell people, okay, let's give thanks to God. And God doesn't need anything, but his children need something. Okay, so give to them. Pay it forward. I mean, it's just a beautiful system. And if you think about it, all of these become delivery systems. How do you educate a population? Well, you need school. You need a delivery system for that education. How do you take care of the health of a population? Well, you need a system of medical institutions, whether they become the group of doctors, the hospital itself, or the clinics, whatever it is, that becomes a delivery system. And so too, how do you take care of the poor? Many ways, but within society, it's always been the church that has put at its forefront this mission of tending the poor, because it has been given this responsibility by Christ himself, who said, take care of these people. Take care of these people who cannot take care of themselves. So it all comes down to a delivery system. And how well you deliver really depends on the people that are orchestrating it, their understanding. Seriously, I mean, think about it. Can a church really be a church without having an outreach program, without having a delivery to the people who cannot fend for themselves? Can it legally call itself a church? Well, yeah, legally it can, but you know what I mean. In the sight of God, in the sight of what Christ has set up as his church, he set it up as a means by which the love is distributed. St. Paul talks about this throughout his letters, and again, we go back to Pope Francis, today's comment that he made about the Eucharist, about the delivery system, right, about the love and the mercy. Okay, since apostolic times, the Apostle Paul writes about it, all the way up until this time where you're hearing representatives of the church, including yours truly here, talking about how the church has been set up to give. And Christ says it at the end, this is how people are going to be judged, on how you give, how you share the goodness that God has given for it to you. So I'm going to talk about preservation in a couple minutes. Just wanted to start it off with a recap of last week and also a follow-up, because the article did come out, and it did come out in print just a couple days ago. It was on the internet like 4 or 5 days before. I got to tell you, wait, before I go there, I got to tell you, I was shocked at newspaper. I mean, we're all reading news now on the net. It had been a while. It had been at least a year since I'd picked up a copy of a newspaper. But I went and picked up a copy of this one because our dear family, Hripsig and Sako, were in there. And I said, oh, I got to go get a paper and give it to $2. $2 for the daily newspaper. I mean, you know, I want to talk about prehistoric times, but when I was a kid, it was like a dime. And I believe the last time I bought a newspaper about a year ago, it was about 50 cents, but up to $2. And then my son looked at it and he said, it's because of all the color pictures. So the reason I'm bringing this up is not about the $2, but it's about the color pictures and about the competition with the electronic media and how we are receiving and deciphering news on a daily basis. And how are these people from the old days going to make their living? Well, they still do carry a lot of weight, though. That's one thing that I did find out from this whole experience. A lot of weight. When somebody says it's been published in the LA Times, that's quite different than it's been published on your blog. Depending on whose blog, yeah, you're right. Anyway, we're going to take a break right now with the song of the day. I'm going to be back in a few minutes to talk about preserving canned meats and otherwise. You ready? Here's today's song. Enjoy. Yaren Margaryan, the name of the artist, that is called Armenian Patterns. Cool, right? Just different patterns, different sounds coming at you, a few different beats hitting you at different intervals, the syncopation, and well, just Armenian patterns. Yeah, what else do you want? Armenian Patterns. Garen Margaryan, the name of the artist. That's off of an album called A Thousand Colors. There'll definitely be a link on today's show notes. You could check out all of his great music. And do check out these artists. It's a way for them to get be known by all of us. But in return, we get to know them and share their music too. So do check out the link on today's show notes. Garen Margaryan, Armenian Patterns off of the album A Thousand Colors. Now, how about preserving? Preserving. Have you done any preserving? How about, have you canned? You know, it was more popular back then. Right now, we live in a world where everything is accessible and is certainly attainable at the times, well, relatively, at the times we so desire them. I'm thinking back, you know, when we were kids, when would you have watermelon? It would be a summer treat. A summer treat was watermelon. You'd get all these delicious fruits, but especially watermelon, and just juicy, succulent, and the water and cold, and it just melted in your mouth. The sugar fix that you'd get on it. Anyways, great fruit. Now you can have watermelon just about any time during the year. Even more, how about the grapes? Well, we know that because, well, we wouldn't eat grapes until the blessing of grapes, August 15th, the Assumption Feast. Well, that was just a tradition, something that we learned from our grandparents. We just never touched the grapes until they were blessed in the church. And they were blessed when? Well, right in August. Now, and the reason for that, of course, before I go to the now, the reason for that is because they would come to harvest in the summer, particularly in Armenia. And we're in the Northern Hemisphere and right here in California as well, Southern California. We'd get them right in August. Now you can have them year-round, thanks to refrigeration. The first parish that I served in was in San Jose, and I was very, very fortunate to get to know two just incredible brothers who ran a grocery chain up there. Well, actually, the big grocery store that supplied to grocery chains. They were called the Amirian Brothers Produce. Produce! Amirian Brothers Produce was back in the 1920s, 30s. Imagine that. Here's a couple people leaving, escaping the genocide. They have children here in America. And these children not only are not scared to work, they just defy all of the odds. And they work and they prosper and they make this literally a produce empire. By the time we met them, this was back in 1980s, early 1980s, when we moved to the Silicon Valley and Amirian Produce was the big game in town. They were supplying to such vendors as Safeway, to Lucky's. These were like huge, huge, giant supermarkets. And the produce was coming from these Armenian brothers, Amirian brothers. And I was very, very, very fortunate to get to know them. They were members of my church up there. And I remember one of the first things that I did was I visited them at their produce store and just was shocked because they had contacts with South American growers and farmers. So they took me into the back, into the refrigeration units, where this produce was coming from South America. So basically, we were getting any kind of fruit that we wanted, thanks to, well, transportation, because those fruits were being picked in climates that were ready for those fruits. And so imagine, let's go back to our example. We have the ability to have watermelon here during the summer. Now imagine to the southern hemisphere, where the South America, Australia, we ship it from here, and they can have it during their winter. No problem. Why? Because, and they can have it during their summer, just as we can have the grapes. And I'm getting too excited. I thought about the Amerian brothers, but that's what I saw in their back room, in the refrigerator units. They had grapes from Chile, and it was in the dead of winter. Okay, we're standing in California, and we have succulent grapes, robust grapes, that we're able to enjoy in the middle of winter, right? Thanks to the transportation that was provided from Chile up to through the Americas to the San Francisco Bay Area. And there we were in the dead of winter having these grapes. Okay. We have the means. We have the technology now to have year-round fruit. What was it like before? Well, technology, you know, it's not about gadgets, and it's not about electricity or electronics. Technology is always there. And certainly in the kitchen, there was technology to preserve foods. And one of the ways that they would preserve is through sugar. They would take the fruits, they would preserve them into jams, preserves, marmalades. And so a fruit such as strawberry, which blooms in the early summer, you're able to take and enjoy it in the winter because it's been preserved in a strawberry preserve. Or marmalade, the orange that was ready in the winter, you're able to have during the summer, and so on and so on. That's, of course, the fruits. There's other kinds of preservatives that are used on meats, you know, with what we have in Armenian tradition, bastırma. Yeah, that's a cool one. Susan has an uncle that every November when he comes out to California, his famous signature plate is bastırma and eggs. And he has to make that for all of the nephews and nieces. Yeah, Uncle Harry's bastırma and eggs. Bastırma. This is just basically meat that you can have any time because you didn't have refrigeration units in the old times. So what they did is, and I've seen this when I was in Armenia, we used to keep our meat and our perishable items right on the ledge because, of course, it was snowing outside during the winter, and that ledge on the other side of the radiator right next to the window was very cold. It was like a refrigerator. And so you'd have a way of preserving it. But what did you do? During the summer, you would preserve these meats and you'd hang them. And during the winter, you would have access to these meats, preserving those meats. Now, one more. Pickling. That's the one. Armenian turşi. Turşi. Yeah. Okay, this is where you take the vegetables. You take like cabbage, you take like celery, and you preserve them using a mixture of vinegar and salt. So you've got your fruits using sugar, you've got your vegetables using the vinegar and the salt, you've got your meats using mostly salts to preserve them, but it's a way of enjoying or having access. Remember what we were talking about earlier? Delivery system? Having that access to the food year-round without the refrigeration units. Okay, now why do I bring this up? Okay, what have I been talking about all this time? Where am I going with all this? You tuned into The Next Step and you're looking for Armadox. You're looking for a spiritual connection to all that. Okay, and you're saying this man is talking about all these foods and how to preserve them. How about our culture? How about our faith, our religion? And all of this talk began because last week we happened to be at a fundraiser for a museum that's going to be opened in Los Angeles. And the lady we sat down with, we were at their table at the dinner. She recalled something that my dad had told her. My dad had said to her, and they were at an event in Pasadena, where they were talking about preserving the Armenian culture. And my dad said to her said, why would we want to preserve it? Isn't that what Turshi is? Oh, that's all it took for me. I go, wow, how beautiful is that? I'm so glad. And I know my dad loved that word, Turshi. Like, look at some people who just looked very sour and he'd call them Turshi. That was a wake-up for me, because really, what is it that we do when we talk about preserving? Do you remember a few weeks ago I was talking about a book that came out talking about defense of the Armenian Church? And the cover shot of the book defending the Armenian Church was with swords and shields. And these are the icons that we use when we talk about defense, when we talk about protection, swords and shields. Why aren't we defending the faith with items of love? Why aren't we showing what the faith is all about by doing the actions of love rather than talking about swords and shields? Well, obviously, those swords and shields are more powerful than the love by today's standards. But not obviously, as church people, we have to get the message out that the power of that love, that power of that action of love, is much more powerful than that sword. In the same way, why are we always so determined to preserve things instead of living that faith? We talk about preservation. We have all of these museums and monuments that preserve a past rather than living it. Archbishop Torkel Manugyan said it so eloquently. He said, it's much easier to die for the faith than it is to live for the faith. Well, what does that mean? Yeah, okay, I know martyrdom is part of Christian experience. It's actually part of many different religious experiences, not just Christian, martyrdom. But how about living the faith rather than dying for the faith? I'm ready to die for my faith. It's beautiful. Yeah, of course, it's noble. It's noble, it's patriotic. I mean, the Armenian national anthem itself has it written in there, okay? It's the last line of Mer Hayrenik. It goes, Aminayn deh mahe minne mart miyan kambid merni, paiz yerani ayn martun vor ir azgi hamar gizofi, gnahadagvi gmerni. We have all of these derivatives of it as well, basically saying that everywhere life is one and you only die once, but God bless, or isn't it fantastic for that man who can give up his life for his country, for his homeland, and putting it in this desirable place that you could give up your life. Well, we're understanding. Of course, we're understanding what it's saying. It's saying that that homeland is so precious that the price of it, that you're willing to lay down your life for it. That freedom is so precious that the price tag on it is even equal and beyond even your life. I understand that. But this kind of metaphor, this kind of rhetoric is so prominent, where we talk about giving up our lives for the faith, for the country, rather than saying, let's live our lives for that country. Let's live our lives for that faith. And it's an important one. And it goes in with this idea of preserving. We have opportunities today to preserve. I don't know how old you are. If you've got older parents, you probably run across pictures, actual physical photographs. I know if you're young, you're kind of lucky because they're on a hard drive or they're up in the clouds somewhere, right? But let me tell you, we cleaned out my mom's garage about a couple of years ago. Boxes of pictures from throughout the years. Well, why do you take pictures for? It's a way of preserving, of keeping a memory. You take those pictures. And what happens? Well, you pass them on to your children. You hope that they're going to find some value in it. There's a nostalgia involved in it. Obviously, all children, they'll look at it and say, whoa, look at that. They weren't driving cars. They were on top of dinosaurs. They were on top of ponies or whatever it might be. I mean, in the worst case scenario. But you know what I'm talking about. There's the nostalgic value of those pictures. But basically, for who are those pictures? So that you have a memory. You can preserve. That picture becomes the means. Whether it's sugar, it's salt, or it's vinegar, or the shutter of that camera, it's a way of preserving something. But here's the reality. What happens? People enjoy that in an off season. People will remember the strawberries in the winter because they were preserved. They will remember in their old age the memories from 20, 30, 40 years ago because they were preserved. But that memory fades away, and then it's over with you. It's over with the bite of the food. It's over with the turshi being consumed with the pastrma going into the eggs. And at some point, you have to say goodbye. You have to wash your hands of it. And sooner or later, that happens. So we try to preserve it as far as it goes, as long as it goes. And so, too, when it comes to matters of the church. There are means by which we preserve. We have, for instance, in our diocese and many of the more established dioceses, not only in the Armenian Church, but in other churches, as well as in other institutions, primarily in schools, you'll hear about preserving the institution. How? By endowments, by having endowment funds. People donate money so that the church will be there in perpetuity, will be there 100 years from now. That's beautiful. But let me ask you this. Why should it be there? Why should that preserve be there beyond what you consume that winter? Well, it's good. Yeah, we say, yeah, we should always know what a strawberry tastes like. We should always know what the Armenian church tastes like. And so we have museums for these things. They preserve, but they don't live. You get the distinction? It's a very fine one, but it's worth making. It's important to distinguish. And when this lady turned to me and said, your dad told me this, that why would we want to preserve? That's turshi. That's pickling. Yeah, why would you want to pickle your faith? Why would you want to pickle your life, your culture? Why would you want it to exist in a museum? Well, rhetorical question. Yeah, don't look at me like that. Yeah, rhetorical question, right? Actually, what we really want to do is we want to live that faith. We want to live our culture. We want to live for the good things. We want to live for our families. And yeah, definitely, we're human creatures, people of habit, people who want to connect the dots. And certainly pictures and history and preserving fruits and pickling vegetables and preserving meats with the salt. These are all ways that we can access, and these items can be delivered to us at different intervals, at different times, but at some point they all end. And it's up to us, really, to understand that they do have a purpose in preserving. It's for us to enjoy, for us to participate in, and that they will not stay forever. I question sometimes the meaning of these kind of museums. As you've heard throughout the years, I've talked to you here on The Next Step. Actually, the whole idea of The Next Step is taking a next step beyond preservation. We talked so much about genocide that throughout my years, early years, I mean, I heard it all. Every kind of conceivable argument about the need to preserve and have museums for culture, for genocide. I heard it so much. And when we started The Next Step, it was about, what's the next step? If you haven't seen it, definitely go on our website, on In His Shoes. Check out that video, Leveraging Love. It's all about the next step. It's got to be something more than preservation. It's got to be something more than just bottling it up and pickling it. You don't want pickled culture. You don't want pickled faith. You don't want pickled religion. It has to be lived. It has to be lived. And so we called it The Next Step. This is really the next step. It's beyond the pickling. It's beyond the preservatives. We are alive. We are accessible 24/7. You don't need to pickle us. You don't need to bring us up between time zones. We are people. We are humans. We have the ability for each day to be a blessing of God, where we express ourselves, express our faith, and God touching us every single day of the year. No need to preserve. Yeah, you want to talk about the future. I know. You look at some of these old museums. You look at the pyramids, right? I think they get about as old as you get, right? You look at some of the things that have been left to us from antiquity, and you say, thank God that we have these abilities to see cultures back then. But what are they? They're mummies. They're preserved people. They're preserved cultures. Okay, but they're not alive. I'm not saying do away with museums. I'm saying it gives us an opportunity. The discussion of museums, the discussion of preserving, gives us an opportunity to think about what we are here for. It's not about just preserving. It's about living the day. It's not about defending a faith, but living that faith. It's not about keeping it, dying for the faith. It's about living it, expressing it in the things that we do, making love alive in our lives. That's what the whole discussion of preserving was all about. We're not a pickling kind of people. Christianity is never meant to be pickled. You just can't. Christianity is not to be pickled. That's it. So really think about it. The means by which we preserve Christianity, when we talk about preservation of these institutions, by museums or endowments even. What does endowments say? We want it to be out there because why? It won't be self-sustaining. People won't believe in it in the future, so let's pay it forward right now. Let's leave an endowment so that it will remain forever. What are you saying, basically? It's going to lose relevance. And so as it loses relevance, it's not going to be supported. It needs our money right now. That's what you're basically saying. And that's what the pyramids were. That's what all old museums are, right? People saying, hey, we want people in the future to remember us. But as we remember, as we look back, they're just a bag of bones. They're just a bunch of mummies. They're lifeless. They're finished. It's over. You don't want to be over. You want to be living. That's the invitation. That's the invitation to Christ's world. That's the invitation of a real church. You're not there to preserve. You're not there to mummify. You're not there to build these kind of structures that are going to outlast you because you're scared to death that there's going to be no one in the future who's going to know anything about it or be able to support it. How about make the investment in that future, in those people, by investing your love, sharing your love so that people buy into it and say, yeah, I need to do that too. And then it becomes naturally perpetuated, right? Naturally perpetuated. And we all know natural is much better than preservatives, much better than artificial means of preservation, right? I got you there. Anyway, here is Susie to talk about how you can help us unpreserve and perpetuate this mission. Be back in a minute.
Hi, Susie here again, reminding you that the next step is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We've been broadcasting for 8 years now. We invite you to check out our extensive archive about applied spirituality and Christianity for just about every life situation. You'll find past podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Blueberry, and of course at the In His Shoes website. Each episode is filled with insights about faith and applications of love. We're proud to have these podcasts available to our worldwide audience, with listeners added daily. To become a partner of this ministry, please consider donating by pressing on the donate button on our website. Your monetary contributions goes to maintain and further this dynamic mission, bringing the message of Armadoxy into the lives of a waiting world. Let us know if you'd like to sponsor a series of podcasts by dropping us a note at feedback@epostle.net. That's epostle with an E. Apostolic Evangelism for an Electronic World, .net. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
We're getting in the final months of the year, and it's a great time for you. If you're planning on making a donation, to make it, because, well, certainly here in the United States, there are some incredible tax laws that you can take advantage of if you make your donation in the last portion of the year. It's just as making your donation in the first portion of the year. It actually goes into the tax relief of 2015. So if you need a tax break, this would be directly opposite of what I teach. Give a donation because you get a tax break. And I feel very confident saying that because, you know what? I know you, the listeners. You're not tax break people. You're people that give because you believe in it. Because it speaks to you. Because it's something that is necessary right now. And so here's our appeal, our weekly appeal, that if this is a worthwhile ministry to you, please be supportive, whether it's through your prayers, passing the link on to your friends, or through your donations. We appreciate everything that you do for us, and most essentially, keeping us in prayers. I've been getting a lot of prayer requests lately, and please know that all of them, you're always in my prayers, especially during the Divine Liturgy. My thanks to God for this beautiful family that we have in Apostle and in His Shoes. And as we close up today's show, I want to invite you to get involved with us on Facebook. You'll find a few different things, whether it's the St. Peter Armenian Church in Glendale, In His Shoes, different places where you can follow us personally, also the mothership, which is inhisshoes.org, epostle.net, and you know what? Yeah, we're all over the place. On Stitcher, iTunes, Blueberry, we're just every place. Yeah, we're even beyond the stratosphere. Yeah, we are. I don't know. We shot it out there, and it's going. Hey, listen, I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as you enjoyed producing it. For the staff, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath, cut out.